wonderful and caring friends, welcome to Planet Earth, our loving home, on Supreme Master Television. This week we are fortunate to speak with Dr. Peter Barrett, Professor of Geology and Director of the Antarctic Research Centre at Victoria University of Wellington in New Zealand. Professor Barrett has spent over four decades studying the Antarctic, with a particular interest in its historical evolution over time. In the 1960s, Professor Barrett spent 5 years at Ohio State University, USA, where he completed his doctorate. He also worked in Antarctica, mapping the continent's mountains, and thus became fascinated by the ancient history of the region. When he returned to New Zealand, he took part in a deep-sea geological drilling expedition of the ocean floor near the Antarctic. He discovered that core samples obtained from drilling are the key way to trace the past of the Antarctic continent. Currently, Professor Barrett is taking ice core samples in the Antarctic to better understand the climatic and chemical changes that have occurred in the area over time.
You've been working on several Antarctic drilling projects for the last 30 years or so. Can you tell us how these projects help us to understand Earth's past and present climate?
The polar regions are particularly sensitive parts of the planet. Most of the heat comes in from the sun in the tropics. It gets circulated down to the poles. But changes are greater in the polar regions than they are in the more central part of the Earth. And what the drilling does is to actually get us a history of climate going back in time. And because the Antarctic is mostly covered with ice, we can't use exposed rocks like you do on other continents, so drilling is so important.
Professor Barrett is also investigating the effects of global warming on the Earth's ice sheets and the subsequent rises in sea levels. Dr. Jay Zwali, a leading American climatologist with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, in the United States, has stated that the Arctic could be ice-free by the summer of 2012. Professor Peter Barrett shared with us the possible repercussions of such an event.
There will be quite profound consequences. But perhaps first it's important to say that the changes there are taking place faster than predicted. That our understanding of 10 years ago suggested that this melting wouldn't take place until later this century. But, you know, we are gaining knowledge so quickly now, it's important to realise that we must sort of stay apace with this knowledge so that we can make better judgments about the future.
Although much discussion has occurred regarding the melting of the Greenland ice sheets, the disintegration of the ice at the Antarctic is also a significant marker of global warming. This precious place contains 90% of the world's ice and thus holds most of its freshwater reserves. If the Antarctic were to completely melt, it could potentially cause a 190-foot or 58-meter rise in sea level. This figure does not take into account thermal expansion or the increase in the volume of water when it is heated, which could further raise the height of the ocean.
Well, in the last 4 years, the scientific reports, not only from the Antarctic, though these are serious, but also from the tropical regions, make it quite clear that it's human CO2 or greenhouse gas emissions that are causing these changes that we're observing. And I'm just mindful of the Nobel Peace Prize that was awarded to Al Gore and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It was a peace prize because of the work that that committee has done to understand and advocate for the management of the climate problem.
The Antarctic can be divided into three main areas: the peninsula, the West Antarctic, and the East Antarctic. In March 2008, a large part of the Wilkins Ice Shelf, located in the peninsula, measuring about 405 square kilometres, separated from the peninsula. In January 2009, it was reported that the entire shelf, which measures more than 14,000 square kilometres, is near total collapse.
In the case of the Wilkins Ice Shelf, this is significant because the Antarctic Peninsula is warming faster than almost anywhere else on Earth. The warming rate, well, it's like 2.5 degrees in the last 50 years. That's also true of the Arctic and Siberia, but most of the rest of the Earth is not that fast. And that is now recognised as a response to this warming, which itself is a part of the larger global warming that we're now starting to experience. So, if you like, it represents a warning. With the knowledge that we now have of Earth history and carbon dioxide levels in the past, it's quite plain that we are moving now into a very dangerous period of climate change. In our own work in Antarctica, the West Antarctic ice sheet collapsed, or simply wasn't present. We have good records of this 3 or 4 million years ago, at a time when CO2 levels were less than 400 parts per million, and we're now approaching that. Now, this is a situation where we don't expect that the moment it reaches that point, the Antarctic will respond. But what it does mean is that we have actually the climate in which that will eventually take place. First, the sequence is very clear. The ice shelves break out first, and you mentioned the Wilkins ice shelf. That's further north, but that's already happening. The Ross ice shelf is much bigger. It will need a rise in temperature, that region, of 4 or 5 degrees. But that could happen within a few decades. And then once that goes, that releases the ice in West Antarctica. So it's hard to say what's worse, it actually happening now, or a civilization that lives in the knowledge that it will happen and that sea level will rise 10 or 15 meters as a consequence.
Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. We'll be right back with more insightful information on the future of the Antarctic from Professor Peter Barrett. Welcome back to Planet Earth, Our Loving Home, where we have been speaking with Professor Peter Barrett of Victoria University of Wellington in New Zealand about the melting Antarctic ice sheets. The melting of the polar ice caps is exacerbated by a feedback mechanism known as the albedo flip, whereby human-induced global warming heats the atmosphere and ocean, thus melting the ice sheets. As ice acts like a mirror and reflects some of the sun's rays back out to space, the increased ice melt allows more of the sun's energy to enter the ocean, thus further warming the water and causing an increase in the melting of the ice. This situation is made worse by the subsequent release of methane and other global warming gases from the Earth's frozen permafrost. Professor Barrett explains more about this imminent danger.
There is another risk with methane, and that is the fact that billions of tons are stored in the solid form beneath the oceans, and in a warming world these could be released. And at the moment in the Arctic, methane is bubbling away. It's been observed in the last year. The melting of permafrost releases more methane, and nobody knows just when some sort of point will be reached when there will be a cataclysmic dissociation, discharge of methane. This is a very good reason to keep global temperatures as low as possible.
In such critical times, the world needs sound solutions and immediate actions, both at the individual and governmental levels. Professor Barrett explains.
I just see a very obvious moral obligation. You can make it more personal by the notion of a personal carbon footprint. In my country, our carbon footprint is about 4 tons of carbon per year per person. This is large. In countries like India or China, it's much less than 1 ton. Even though the emissions might be large, the individual footprint is small. So, because the core problem is carbon dioxide in particular, it's a gas that is very long-lived. And so I see it as our responsibility to reduce and eliminate carbon dioxide emissions so that the Earth can have its balance restored.
What do you see as the important actions that need to be taken from a leadership level?
Oh, to me, the most important thing is to acknowledge the problem and to advocate ways of dealing with it at every level. And to me, the outstanding example of this is Barack Obama, with a very clear statement in which I would love to be able to quote completely, but to me it was quite a relief and quite inspirational that he was essentially saying that the science is understood, the problem is great, it can no longer be denied, we must act now.
And what changes would you encourage on an individual level to reduce climate change?
Well, there are many, and I actually think individual action is just as important as governmental action. The reason is that I think we personally need to feel both positive and challenged, and to feel that we are making the biggest difference we can. And so the sort of actions, I think, in terms of our thinking, to live simply, to just to think about what we do, and really use as little energy as possible.
According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization report entitled Livestock's Long Shadow, the livestock industry is responsible for producing more greenhouse gas emissions than all the transport in the world combined, including cars, planes and ships. Nobel laureate and chairman of the International Panel on Climate Change, Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, has also stated that one of the most effective ways to reduce our carbon footprint is to stop the consumption of meat. In fact, according to a study by Drs. Gideon Eshel and Pamela Martin, assistant professors of geophysics at the University of Chicago, USA, the carbon footprint of a meat-based diet is 1.5 tons heavier than that of a plant-based diet per person per year. We asked Professor Barrett for his views on the benefits of a vegetarian diet with regard to climate change.
Well, I can see the benefits of the vegetarian diet very clearly. I have reduced my meat intake quite significantly, and I'll continue to do so. I think move in that direction towards a vegetarian diet is really a very important part of the changes that we need to make.
Named Wellingtonian of the Year in 2006, Professor Barrett concluded the interview with some words of encouragement and hope for the planet and its inhabitants.
I think there are sort of quite a few examples around the world in our history where there have been positive changes. I'm quite sure that this is what we will get to eventually. The only question is how much damage do we have to suffer in the process? And this is why urgency is important. The next few years are important. Jim Hansen, I think, has been outstanding in the way that he makes this clear. And his goal of 350 parts per million, I think we must really simply acknowledge and aim for. Now, we have exceeded that, but the challenge is for a mix of our technology and a changed way of life to reduce CO2 levels down to 350 ppm and try to really get us out of the danger zone.
With both the Arctic and Antarctic ice caps melting, urgent action is needed to reduce carbon, methane and other greenhouse gas emissions to restore balance to our beautiful planet. The simplest and quickest way to stop global warming that everyone can do easily and immediately is to adopt a plant-based vegan diet, which also happens to be exceptionally good for one's health. To close our program, we would like to extend our gratitude to Professor Peter Barrett for his wise words and precious time. Caring viewers, we would like to sincerely thank you for your noble company today on Planet Earth, our loving home. Coming up next is enlightening entertainment, after noteworthy news here on Supreme Master Television. May we all make eco-friendly choices to quickly enter a greener and more compassionate era.